I can get is static or variations on the central musical rhythm.
I only wish there was some way we could tell it to shut up. It's driving me crazy. And it keeps getting louder.
We have no way of estimating the volume this creature can produce.
The only logical solution is to listen to CJSF 90.1 FM. They broadcast from Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia. Let's tune in now.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
These times of intense political polarization, civic despair is rampant. How does this downheartedness affect our democracy, and how can we counteract this apathy? Our guest today, Sam Daly Harris, has been working tirelessly to provide trainings for ordinary citizens to empower effective citizen political action. He has many suggestions and experience in working with how we can be most effective in reshaping the issues we most care about. Sam Daly Harris is the founder of Results and Results Educational Fund. Results is an international grassroots citizens lobby committed to healing the break between people and government and creating the political will to end hunger and the worst aspects of poverty. He is the director of Results Educational Fund's largest project, the Microcredit Summit, a campaign to reach 100 million of the world's poorest families, especially the women of those families, with credit for self-employment and other financial and business services. He's the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government, the 20th Anniversary Edition. Join us for the next hour as we explore grassroots activism with our guest, Sam Daly Harris. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Sam, welcome.
It's great to be here.
It's great to be sitting across from you once more. It's been some years now, and I would like for you to remind our listeners a little bit about your background, how you moved from being a musician to a political activist.
Well, it's a little bit of a strange story, but a fun story. I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in music, and I played percussion instruments in the Miami Philharmonic Orchestra in Florida for 12 years. And then, 37 years ago, I founded the anti-poverty lobby Results. And a lot of times I'm asked, music, poverty lobby, what was that about? And when I look back in my life, there are certain experiences that prompted the shift. I graduated from high school in 1964 and played timpani in the orchestra at the graduation. And just before the ceremony, a flute player came back to the percussion section and told me that a high school fraternity brother of mine, a year younger, had died the day before in a tractor-trailer accident in Georgia. It was her next-door neighbor, so she knew about it before I did. I always say I was 17. When I was 17, mortality was an irrelevant concept. I thought I had forever. But with the mourning period and the funeral, after the funeral, I went with my friend's younger brother to pick up his report card from the homeroom teacher. it began to dawn on me that maybe I had 17 more minutes or months or years. And the questions of purpose came up at a rather young age. Why am I here? What am I here to do? What's my purpose? No answer. But the question started coming up. 4 years later, 1968, college graduation, Robert Kennedy's assassinated right in those days. And it's another one of those, what is this life? What is this debt? Why am I here? What am I here to do? No answers. But the questions are getting clearer. 9 years later, I always say I'm a little slow. I'm invited to a presentation on ending world hunger put on by the Hunger Project. And I go to this thinking, well, hunger's inevitable. What do I know? I'm a musician. Well, it's inevitable because there are no solutions. Because if there were solutions, somebody would have done something by now. I go to this presentation and it's obvious right away. There's no mystery to growing food or clean water, or basic health or literacy. I'm not hopeless about the perceived lack of solutions. I'm hopeless about human nature. People will just never get around to doing the things that can be done. But there's one human nature I have some control over, my own, and my question, why am I here? What am I here to do? So I get involved in a big way. This is the end of the story and that sets me on this path. In 1978 and 79, I speak to 7,000 high school students, classroom by classroom by classroom. And before I go into the first classroom, I read some statements from the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, Food and Nutrition Study, and others calling for the political will to end hunger. So I asked 7,000 high school students, what's the name of your member of Congress? I don't want to know if you wrote him. I don't want to know if you met him. Just the name. Out of 7,000 asked, 200 could answer correctly, just fewer than 3%. 6,800 could not tell me who their congressperson was, just over 97%. Could not. And results grew out of this gap between the calls for the political will to end hunger on the one hand and the lack of basic information on who represented us in Washington on the other. And that was my journey from musician, oddly enough, to activist and now a bit more democracy activist and really working with other organizations to empower their members more effectively than usual.
So tell me, what would you consider the predicament that we are in today?
Oh, wow. Yeah, so here's, I have these quotes I love. Maybe I'll share two of them. There are more after that. But Francis Moore LePay, who wrote Diet for a Small Planet many years, 40-something years ago, has a new book, Daring Democracy, said the following in another book, called Getting a Grip 2. She said, our real problem is not a heating planet or rampant malnutrition. We only have one real problem, our own feelings of powerlessness to manifest the solutions right in front of our noses. So what my work is working with organizations to create a structure of support that's strong enough to dissolve the powerlessness. And if I could share one more of these quotes.
Please do.
Yeah. This is from Lawrence Lessig, the Harvard professor working to get money out of politics. It was about 2 years ago. He said, a recent poll found that 96% of Americans want money out of politics, but 91% said it isn't possible. That's the politics of resignation. But the politics of resignation gives us a way forward. If we can find a way to thaw the resignation, we can find a way to winning. So my gig is, with Civic Courage, I coach other organizations in creating structures of support that are strong enough to thaw the resignation. Or said one other way, if you're in a room of 30 people launching a chapter of the organization, and 15 raise their hand and say, I'm in. In what? What did the volunteer promise to the organization? And what did the organization promise to the volunteer? Is it something that's inspiring and empowering? Or is it sort of just informational and wonky and a little bit on the boring side? Is it, I'm in, something powerful or something not that powerful? And I work with groups, and that's my message to the listeners, is find an organization that feeds you. Find an organization that takes you from wherever you are, kindergarten to first, third, fifth, 12th grade and beyond as a citizen, so you don't feel that resignation. You're breaking out of that resignation.
Let's just back up a little bit. You mentioned just briefly in passing something called civic courage.
Yes.
And that's the name of that you use on the website that, mm-hmm. that people can go to,
yes.
civiccourage.org, O-R-G, civiccourage.org. And so that's, you're working within that structure these days. And you said something about, gave some statistic about money out of politics, mm-hmm. and how there's a huge percentage wants it. And that sounds like that huge percentage is bipartisan.
Mm-hmm. You can't have 96% wanting money out of politics without it being Republicans, Independents, Democrats.
So we're not talking about that they're just one group of people want it. We're talking that there's...
Yes.
It's across the board. So that's very exciting news.
It is very exciting news, but there's a but in there.
Okay, tell us.
With the bills in Congress on overturning Citizens United, that Supreme Court decision from 2011 that said corporations are people and money is speech and corporations and the wealthy and unions and others can spend as much money as they want.
When that decision came down, mm-hmm. to me, it seems like to say corporations are people. I just remember years ago when we were doing interviews with Buckminster Fuller, mm-hmm. Bucky Fuller, he used to say, don't worry about your enemies. They'll die off someday.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
What he was trying to say is don't spend your energy trying to resist them, but go for what it is that mm-hmm. you know is yours to do, is mm-hmm. what he was trying to mm-hmm. say when he was saying that. And when I heard about Citizens United and the Supreme Court decision, I thought, wait a minute, corporations don't necessarily die off. Mm-hmm. You know, they can live forever. They are not mortal like human beings. Mm-hmm. How can you say that they are a person and they have personhood? So that was my first objection to that just seems so logical.
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to interrupt
I'm going to finish that, but the book Bucky Fuller quote that I love was when he said, the things to do are... the things that need doing, that you see need to be done, and that no one else seems to see needs to be done. And when I asked 7,000 students, who's your congressman, and fewer than 3% could answer, and I read these quotes calling for the political will, then hunger, I saw something that needed doing, this healing between people and government, that not many people saw at that time. So going back to the money and politics, with 96% want money out of politics, but 91% think it isn't possible. That's our predicament. And one of the groups I work with is American Promise, working to get money out of politics. And one of the things, they're not quite 2 years old. They've got about 18 chapters around the country started this year. But what's really interesting about it is they've seen, obviously, that of all the bills in Congress to overturn Citizens United, there's only one Republican co-sponsor.
Let's talk more about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Sam Daley Harris. He spells his last name Daley hyphen Harris, Harris. He's the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government. And if you want to know more about him, go to his website, civiccourage.org. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Sam Daly Harris, the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government. And we're talking about a movement about politics and campaign financing and money in politics. And you're talking about a group called American Promise. And you just made a statement. Now, this is a bipartisan group.
Very. And I want to describe, and what they saw, because they're not that old, was that of all the bills in Congress to overturn Citizens United, and 150 co-sponsors on the various bills, one Republican. So they've taken on meeting with, working with, bringing Republicans on board. And I want to bring a couple of things together with this comment. This is an example of one of the groups I work with and the kind of group that really feeds their volunteers. And I want to give you this one example. They have a monthly conference call. And over the last 6 months, this has been their conference call guests. And they do training too. But they had Congressman Jamie Raskin, who's a congressman from Maryland. And then the next month, they had Congressman Jim McGovern, who's a congressman from Massachusetts. And then the next month, they had Francis Moore LePay, who we discussed a little bit earlier. And then the next month, they had Ben Cohen of Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, who's a democracy activist. And these last two guests, I want to point out more particularly, their guest a month ago was John Pudner, who was the campaign manager for David Brat, the candidate who beat Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, several years ago. So quite Republican. And this month, their conference call guest was Nina Turner, who heads up Bernie Sanders' organization, Our Revolution. So you have a very to the right Republican, very to the left Democrat, all agreeing on getting money out of politics and talking to the groups on the nationwide telephone conference call about how you can be more effective on making it bipartisan and bringing the two sides together when there's so much agreement on gun control issues. I don't work on those. I wish I did. On money and politics issues, I do work with groups on that. On even climate change, where there's more and more agreement, although politically, not yet.
The political will isn't there yet, yeah. but the support, at mm-hmm. least ideologically, yeah. is yeah. there, but yeah. it's not manifesting. So what you're working with is how people can tap into this. We don't mm-hmm. hear this in the regular media, whatever we're looking at.
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Citizens Climate Lobby, another group I work with, they were the main force behind a bipartisan climate solutions caucus in the House of Representatives. And the election in November 2016, there were 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats on the caucus. And after the election, 4 Republicans either retired or lost their seats. So it was down to 6 Republicans and 6 Democrats. After President Trump was inaugurated, 24 more Republicans and 24 more Democrats joined the caucus. So there are now 30 Republicans and 30 Democrats on the House Climate Solutions Caucus, when 3 years ago, you couldn't get one Republican join anything that says climate in the
title. Is this the one, I know, I can't remember which one it was, but one of these committees that self-appointed them, the mm-hmm. self-appointed
caucus,
committees,
maybe.
Caucus, all right, yeah. that they wouldn't accept your enrollment in it unless you brought somebody from across the aisle.
That's it.
And that, wait a minute, that was
Democrat
really,
has to bring a Republican, or a Republican has to bring a Democrat.
Otherwise, they can't join.
No, can't join. Yeah.
Now, that's
so now up to 30 and 30.
So it keeps it even.
Yes.
And yes. you can't even get yes. in the club unless yeah. you bring in yes. somebody who is on the other side of the aisle.
So let me, if I could, give a glimpse
Please.
Of the how.
All right.
And so this is a little excerpt. It's from a New York Times article on Citizens Climate Lobby. And they're talking to a woman. Well, first of all, they say volunteers rehearse short presentations called laser talks. They learn how to frame the climate issue from different perspectives, like an issue of health or economic stability. They never get into arguments about the science, which they know are doomed from the start. They're trained to show good manners, begin meetings by expressing appreciation, listen with an open mind, follow up with thank you letters. Now, this is the part I wanted to read. It can't be lip service, said Ashley Hunt Monterano, a former volunteer who's now on staff. It has to come from a genuine place. For instance, she said, she and her colleagues first met with their congressman, Representative Lee Zeldin, a Republican of Long Island, New York. They expressed appreciation for his service in Iraq and the state Senate before mentioning anything about climate change. He interrupted us, she said. He said, I have to say, you guys are not normal. You're smiling. You're saying nice things about me. That's not what people like you do when you come into my office. Since then, the volunteers have met with Zeldin or members of his staff. This is since 2015. They've met with him or his staff 32 times. They understand his interests and passions, and they've helped him advance some of his legislative goals. He was the fifth Republican to join the House Climate Solutions Caucus, the fifth of 30. And these last two paragraphs, if I could just read them, are him speaking, the congressman. The climate lobby is an exceptional group that's pursuing an amazingly productive, substantive way to engage with members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, Congressman Zeldin told me. Countless times I've had people come into my office on an issue, and even if we were on the same page, they would start off the meeting very aggressive and hostile. It was counterproductive, the congressman said. The way we communicate about the issues to achieve clean air and clean water should be bringing our country together, regardless of party registration or ideology, he added. This really is an issue that everyone agrees on more than anything anyone's admitting. There's a communications gap that needs to be overcome, the congressman said. So that's a little, end of quote, that's a little glimpse of how do you start changing the
Well, what I get from that, Sam, is that in today's climate, there is a culture of permission to yell and scream and resist. Mm-hmm. You know, that's mm-hmm. where what it is, to hold the position mm-hmm. and to yell and scream it out and so forth. And so you're looking at, you're pointing out that may not be so effective.
Or it might not be for everyone.
Or it might not be for everyone.
So let me just say,
okay,
resisting is important to stop bad things from happening. It's about to be voted on, raising hell.
So like the Million Women's March.
Absolutely. But especially as it then addressed health care and undoing Obamacare. So when people rose up at town hall meetings to say, stop, no, as far as I'm concerned, that's an important aspect or example of resistance. Now, it doesn't happen to be my style. In other words, I think I might not be here 40 years later if that's what I did every day. The people who do that responsibly, I applaud them. And I thank them. That doesn't happen to be my style, and so I coach on a more bipartisan transformational piece.
Well, Sam, going back to your Bucky quote, is that your piece
yeah.
is working with the bipartisan
yes.
issues that
yes.
is coming in
yes.
on a more grassroots effort of training and being effective in a different way.
Yes. Yes.
But no less effective.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
maybe even in the long run,
yeah.
run even
yeah.
more effective and, or more necessary.
And let me say this to your listeners, what you're up against as a listener And it's this. I'm going to tell one or two quick stories if there's time. I was talking to the head of organizing for a group. I'm not going to say which one. It was like from CARE, Save the Children, Oxfam, Catholic Relief Services, World Vision, that kind of thing. He said, we can't have our volunteers write letters to the editor or op-eds because they'll get it wrong and misrepresent the organization, protecting your brand. I said, well, yeah, if you give them a kindergarten curriculum and then you ask them to write a letter to the editor, they will get it wrong. But if you give them something richer than that, they won't get it wrong. He said, oh, no, you don't understand. We have 15 media staff at head office. They do the media. I said, well, sure, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, USA Today. But who's working with the Salt Lake Tribune and the Miami Herald?
Or the Topeka, whatever.
Yeah, yes, Gazette. Where Congress is, they're not working with them. So the listener who's saying, well, okay, I'm hearing this message that you need to find a group that nurtures you. Some groups say, no, you're going to get it wrong and misrepresent the organization. You need to find a group that's saying, yes, you can be amazing. We're going to train you. We're going to empower you. We're going to inspire you. And then you can have a way forward.
And then what I get from what you're saying is that as an individual, to find, there's so much happening and so much to keep track of. And what I hear you saying is find that issue that connects with you emotionally.
Yes.
Is that what you...
And then find the organization that can empower you with that issue, because we still then need the support. The other way I say it is, rather than kind of doing clicktivism, mouse-click activism on 10 different issues and feeling ineffective on all 10, find the one you just said that really moves you. And if you say, well, five move me, okay, pick one of those and be profoundly effective on the one. You can still click away on the other nine, but no matter what, you're still feeling profoundly effective on the one. And the profoundly effective includes, I see myself in a new light. I'm doing things I couldn't envision myself doing before. I'm taking new territory as a citizen. And that's really, I think, what people need to be looking for.
I think that that's so important, that we feel so disempowered these days. So when we find that and we find an organization and find a group with whom we can associate and learn effective methods together, then it just lifts us up. Like it lifts us up. It heartens us. It makes our heart glad. And then we're not so pessimistic or beaten down about the system as a whole, because we're doing this one thing. We remind ourselves of this is working. Yeah. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Sam Daly Harris, and he's the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to the website civiccourage.org, civiccourage.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts.